Welcome to the Office Space Podcast, where we discuss relevant topics that are affecting occupiers of office space. I'm your host, Dougal Jeppy with Colliers International. And today our guest is Brian Atkinson, Managing Director at Hines. Brian, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Dougal. Good morning.
Good morning. Today is July 14th. It's a Tuesday, and it's a beautiful day to be in Chicago. Brian is also in the Chicago area. Hines is a privately owned global real estate investment development and management firm that was founded in 1957 with a presence in 205 cities in 24 countries and $133 billion of assets under management. That's directly from your website, so that's probably somewhat fluid. But in Chicago, some of the buildings that are maybe more recognized would include 444 West Lake, aka River Point, where one of my favorite restaurants is, Gibson's Italia, 131 South Dearborn, aka Citadel Center, and 321 North Clark Street, which recently completed a major redevelopment and also has a great restaurant, RPM Seafood. So, Brian, maybe just give us a little intro on yourself, your background, your responsibility at Hines, and what you're doing there.
Sure. Thanks. That's a great background. And I have similar information on my laptop to talk about if we get there. So I'm a managing director in leasing and development for Hines. I've been with the firm for coming up on 7 years. I've been in the Chicago market for almost 20 years, but the last seven have been spent working on the principal side of the business, both on our existing owned assets, our client investor owned assets, and then working on new development projects, including the future Salesforce Tower. Helped complete the lease up at 444 West Lake, which you mentioned, handling the leasing at 321 North Clark, our redevelopment there. And then we have a couple other projects in the pipeline that have not yet been announced that we will be launching here in the coming months on the office side.
Great. And so Hines is large, global organization. How do you guys differ from other real estate developers, and how are you organized and funded? And you described, you know, development, some management. How do you typically acquire assets?
Sure. Well, Hines is a family business. When it comes down to it, Mr. Hines started the business in 1957. That's Gerald Hines. His son, Jeff Hines, is the CEO and still leads the company. Mr. Hines, Gerald Hines, is still involved periodically, comes to events and whatnot. He's 94 years young. And Jeff's children, led by Laura, who is now in the executive suite, will be the third generation to lead the business. So we're very much a family-run business. We're privately held. Our funding for projects comes from multiple sources. In Chicago market, new developments, we tend to source with various institutional LP investors. We've partnered with Ivanhoe Cambridge. We've partnered with BIT, Builders Investment Trust, which is asset managed by PNC. We've had a long-standing relationship with the Levy Family Partners, Larry Levy's business investment group for real estate and diversified real estate. But on a global basis, we do have a fund business that we work with sovereigns from around the globe that have invested with us. We have funds that are focused on value add or core fund investments throughout Europe, the U.S., Canada. And so we have a variety of sources. And it's hard to specify in an individual project. We don't own a portfolio, for example, in Chicago that's all one ownership group. So it allows us to be flexible, allows us to be nimble, allows us to also source, because of our scale, source from investors throughout the world, which has afforded us the opportunity to be a part of the very best projects in specific markets.
Yeah, and you guys have a sterling reputation. I mean, you know, as a tenant rep broker, you guys, you know, pick the right assets, you develop, you know, top quality assets. And so kudos to you guys. And
we appreciate that. I think from, you know, that comes from the top down. Mr. Hines, again, was a mechanical engineer by trade. He came to the business through the back door, if you will, in terms of coming from the mechanical side, but it was always a focus on quality. And when he moved into the office side of development and business, it really became a focus on architecture. And so that ethos is a thread that goes through all of our projects. We really try and afford the best in quality. And I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about some various parts of our team that instill that. So we appreciate the kudos, but it comes from hard work and it comes from the top.
Good. So what are you talking about in your Heinz meetings right now? First of all, are you having any in-person meetings or are you guys just doing it all virtually? And what are you guys addressing right now? How do you organize and prioritize the issues that I'm sure you're facing?
Sure. Well, we've been in Chicago anyways. We've been remote since the third week in March. We were going to make a test run of it a week to see where it went, and we're still in a work from home state. I'd say that transition went off amazingly well. So for the most part, our meetings are all online. We have had a couple in-person meetings over the last couple of weeks, just small individuals or been on site for various project teams, et cetera. But for the most part, like a lot of us, we've been working online. Our conversations, it really depends on where we're at. I mean, we're having project meetings for Salesforce Tower and other leasing meetings just as we normally would. They are obviously remote. On a global level, we have regular partners calls, which are usually quite interesting. We'll have everyone from an epidemiologist on the line. We'll have investment bankers. We may have capital markets teams from around the world. We've really had a great array of speakers over the course of this time at home to provide us best information from around the globe. And so what we're talking about, I think, is a lot of what a lot of people are talking about, which is what comes next. When will people come back to work? How will they come back to work? We've been the beneficiaries of a global platform, which has allowed us sight lines into the Asian markets, which were some of the first to come online, and what their return to work strategy was about, what tools they had to implement, how they brought people back to the building, and how that grew from 10%, which is about where we are today in Chicago, to ultimately 25 to 50 to 75% in some of our Asian markets. And so, you know, that's been very useful, I think, in educating and informing our local teams. A lot of what we're talking about is conversations we're having with tenants. Our property management staff has been in touch with tenants on a, you know, daily, weekly basis for understanding what they want and how they want to see our return to work strategy be implemented. So marrying that global perspective with our local teams has been a lot of our daily conversations. And then we're also talking about the future. You know, what does this mean for office, and what does this mean for residential, and what does this mean for how people will use real estate in the future? And so we obviously, like a lot of people, are talking a lot about what the next steps are.
So you've mentioned Salesforce Tower a couple of times. Can you just talk about the success, of landing Salesforce and the how progress is coming and what the future of that project in Chicago is?
Sure. So Salesforce, the Salesforce lease, which lost Salesforce Tower, which for your listeners is a 1.2 million square foot project located on Wolf Point, which is a 3-building project that was kicked off in initial meetings with the Kennedy family, who's owned the land since the 1940s. Those initial meetings took place in 2007. Heinz master planned the whole site with Pelly Clark Pelly to build 3 towers. We've now completed 2 residential buildings, which account for roughly 1,200 square feet. And we secured our final debt financing through the pandemic, which is a story amongst itself. But we're delighted to have that completed and had great sponsorship. And broke ground the beginning of April. And work is underway. If anyone goes downtown, you will see that we have excavation underway. We expect to have the building complete by the end of 2022 for tenant improvements and building tenant occupancy in the spring of 23. The Salesforce lease is really a consolidation of effort on their part. Obviously, that deal was struck pre-pandemic. and they are bringing multiple business groups together. They've pre-leased roughly 525,000 square feet of the building, all in the low rise. And, you know, much of the project will move ahead unchanged. There will be nuance to some of the things we do to have a post-pandemic thought processes. But from a building systems perspective, everything we are bringing to bear at the building, we're going to be, you know, the best offerings in the market as far as air filtration and glass quality and those sort of things. We will probably add some touchless features, probably to the restrooms, and different characteristics. That technology obviously is available, but we haven't fully vetted it. I think we're just beginning to scratch the surface as to what will come out of it, in terms of what technologies come in post-pandemic that we'll add to the building as we go forth. But we're excited about what the future holds. I mean, we think there's a great need for trophy quality real estate. This is a very important site in that the city of Chicago was founded on this property, this land. And we've made a very distinct effort to make sure that what we build there is quite special in the context of the Chicago architectural space.
Yeah, it's going to be a phenomenal project in a great location. You can, you know, for the opening, you can have one of the Cubs come and hit a ball right over to
right.
to your other building.
Right. We benefited from Chris Bryant coming to River Point a couple times. We will have we will have a park there as well. And it'll be quite special. I think what we might do there, though, is we've contemplated the idea of being able to bring in a winter garden that includes a hockey rink. So maybe we can get the Blackhawks out there or something along those lines. It'll be
very
fun.
Very cool. So sales people watch, you know, users, occupiers of space, will watch what Salesforce does moving forward. Have they indicated anything, or what do you know about their work from home strategy and how is it affecting what their layout and lease is at your tower?
Sure. I, not to go too in the weeds on their strategies, but for the most part, all indications are their change of the floor plate and design and plans probably won't change very much. I think the vision of this is their occupancy is in 2023. It's a phased occupancy in that. So, you know, all of this has happened. It seems like it's been going on forever. It's really only been 4 months, which is a very short window of time in the real estate world. They have a very, very long-term commitment to the building. So I don't think that their vision of the space will change dramatically. You know, that may evolve over time. I think most of our users that are looking at the building today are thinking about it in terms of what's their long-term business plan and what's their long-term strategy, less emphasis on today's space. And really that, I think that probably holds true in most of our buildings where people are saying, okay, we need to solve for a 12-month solution. But you know, ultimately in the long term, we think people will return to the office and you know, the culture and the structure of organizations are founded in those special times and space. And so, you know, our expectation is that Salesforce will occupy the building in much the same way that they had planned previously.
Well, that's good to hear. Obviously they have the luxury of time, which I'm assuming you're seeing a lot more short-term renewals with existing tenants that have pending lease expirations.
Yes and no. We've done a few. You know, it's been an interesting, I'm sure for you as well, it's been an interesting 3 or 4 months. We have completed a couple of new transactions that were new to our buildings that were deals that were pending pre-pandemic, and we finalized, you know, through the process. We have had a few renewals for longer term. Again, tenants that have been in the buildings for some period of time, expected to stay there. And then we, of course, have had a few of the groups that have said, look, we need 6 months, 12 months, 18 months to solve what we can do. And we've tried to be accommodating to that as well. I think that, you know, this is the time where relationships are made and being able to work with your clients and your customers is a good time to do it. You know, we have accountability and fiduciary responsibility to our investors and our investors to their investors. But we have tried to be flexible and open-minded when working with most groups and trying to come up with the right solutions. And we think ultimately, you know, again, we're optimistic that the world's going to come back to office space in the future, and that you know, the death of office is a premature discussion from our perspective.
Well, I know you, I'm sure, like a lot of other real estate owners, had dealt with the retail triage first and in dealing with that. What is the future of retail and amenities within your buildings, and what are you doing to address it now? Take Gibson's Italia. You know, I've been there a couple of times since the pandemic. We've sat outside. What's going to happen to something like that?
Sure. I mean, in Chicago, we're the beneficiaries of our biggest retail spaces are with arguably the best operators in the market, with Gibson's Italia, and the Gibson's team is really, you know, one of a kind, if only matched by Let Us Entertain You, which has the RPMC food space at 321, who's also obviously an exceptional operator. We've been amazed at their adaptability and their flexibility in being able to, you know, come up with ideas to keep the doors open in whatever capacity they could. Obviously, you know, the RPM space was really founded on the RPM event space. The RPM in the water is going to take a large hit here in the near term. But again, those are both really long-term tenants, and ultimately the riverfront property and the amenity space that's there as a part of those buildings, we think is very important. If you look at other retail users, we have it across the board. We have some that will probably, small shops that were small operators probably will leave and won't come back. We expect to have a couple of our sandwich places that will slowly return to work as tenants return to work. It's all been, you use the word triage, that's exactly what it's been, is how do we solve for each individual case as appropriate, and trying to find the right solution that works, again, for our investors, but also for the users. And there's going to be some tough decisions. I'm sure we have a couple buildings where I'm sure we'll see a bankruptcy or two also. So those are tough calls. On the building amenity side, the conference rooms and fitness centers and tenant lounges that we have all spent so many hours enhancing and improving over the last 5 to 10 years, today are open in most buildings on a very limited basis. We have limited occupancy, who can be there when, what the rules of engagement are. We expect those, again, to come back. There probably will be different enhancements to them that allow for social distancing to meet the moment. But in the long run, we think the tenants will continue to want to use amenity spaces, because it's a wellness thing, right? And so if there's anything that's come out of the pandemic, is a focus on health and wellness and the well-being of the person. And we think the people that come to the office are still going to seek those things, and they will seek them in forms of, you know, what can the building offer? Is it a tenant lounge? Is it a fitness center? Is it private dining experience? Is it outdoor space? Again, Salesforce Tower will be the beneficiary of a large outdoor park, amphitheater, you know, indoor outdoor space in the amenity lounge. These are all things that almost all of our new developments, we are focused on how do we bring the outdoors in for people. And that's not just here in Chicago. That's a global program. So again, we think we'll come back to what ultimately people really enjoy about being together and working together. We're just case by case basis solving for each piece of the puzzle right now.
Well, I agree. The wellness and amenities, I mean, the wellness tied into the amenities will be important, and it can all be solved for, right? It'll be interesting to see what gets used more and how the amenities evolve. I know that we've got a gym in our building that's not open yet. It's going to be a while until I feel comfortable going into a fitness center. And I think
that's true. I think that's true for a lot of people. And then there's others that say, hey, we want to get out there. We want to be a part of it. And they want to return to normalcy. And it's not just that. I mean, you know, in 2017, Heinz partnered up with the Mayo Clinic and Delos to launch the Well Living Environment and Well Living Lab partnership. And so it's studying these initiatives, and that's taking on a different face. I mean, we think tenants are going to focus as much on the wellness And what their in-building experience is they will on the lead that they have for the, or lead designations that they have for the last 10 years. And so, you know, it will be interesting to see how it comes back, but there's an awful lot of investment that has been made over the last 10, 20, 30 years in the wellness of people and fitness centers and not just in office buildings, but I mean, think about our daily lives. And it's hard to imagine that that goes away. It probably looks different, but people will softboard as they come back. And I think we'll come up with the right solutions that get people comfortable as we move forward.
Well, I'm sure you guys will be at the forefront of those ideas. So that'll be interesting to see how it unfolds. So there's been a large number of redevelopment projects in Chicago over the last 10 years. Where do you see that going, given the current environment?
That's a great question. I think, you know, we have become accustomed to, certainly in the Chicago market, as to a new redevelopment being announced every couple months where someone has taken over a 1920s or 30s or 40s vintage building and decided it will be repurposed in a different way, shape, or form. It'll be interesting to see. I think will remain robust demand from investors that are seeking the returns associated with value add or opportunistic development, redevelopment. There certainly will be opportunities, I think, in the market where buildings underperform over the next, you know, year or two. You know, again, we're just at the start of this. I think that if you go back and look at historical times, it takes a little while for the pain to filter through, and you will start to see some of these buildings that are stressed that may come back as great opportunistic investments or value add investments. What we think will be interesting is the contrast between how people manage work from home and how they manage, call it, the non-trophy space. And so, you know, historically we have seen this big push towards collaboration and people needing to be together, which I'm still remain a believer in, but you also have this contrasting style in that if you have the choice to be in, you know, call it non-trophy, unremarkable space, or you can work from home, what's that push-pull balance look like? And so we really think redevelopment as well as development is going to have to focus on what people want to have in a building in order to come to work, right? There has to be certain things that are delivered that get them excited about leaving their own space or taking on the commute. And so we think the redevelopments of the last several years have really been focused on the tenant experience. We think that will continue. We do think it'll be interesting to see if you'll have the same experiences in, you know, what I would call, I don't want to be derogatory, but more commodity buildings, or if you'll see a greater emphasis on the repositioning of the newer buildings, meaning the 1990s vintage, the 2000 vintage buildings that end up being repositioned and really brought to more of a trophy standard or close to it, as opposed to the repositioning of the 1920s, 1930s vintage buildings of which we have a lot of in Chicago. So I think, again, remains to be seen how that works, but the investor thinking about what the tenant use is going to have to be will have to really be focused on that tenant experience and making sure that it provides what people want in a way that attracts them to give a reason to come to the office.
What about suburbs versus downtown? Are you guys looking more in the suburbs for opportunities?
Well, as you know, we have a large investment in the suburbs in the old McDonald's campus, which has a mixed use environment, includes residential. We'll be launching the first multifamily residential in the Oakbrook market. We have a retail component there, which, again, we're optimistic that retail makes a return, as certainly will be slower than what we had anticipated. And then there is an office piece there. The office piece is designed to be T3, so our timber product, and it is intended to be a differentiated experience in the East-West corridor. We, like many people, I think we look at the trend lines and see where people are going. There's clearly a cohort of millennial employees that are growing older, and they may very well decide to live in the suburban markets, particularly after the pandemic. So there may be some growth in those markets. I personally believe in the strength of the downtown market. I think we'll selectively look at suburban markets. The McDonald's investment is obviously around a a very specific node next to the Oakbrook Mall there. It's great access to transit in terms of people driving and being able to get in and out of the site. We think it'll be a unique office environment with a residential component. So we would selectively shop in the suburbs for the right opportunity. At the core, Chicago, at least, really works exceptionally well for those that even if people do shift their living to the suburbs, the commuting environment in Chicago is second to none in terms of the hard rail and on the metro lines. And so I think from our perspective, it still remains a CBD-focused investment, but there might be opportunities to selectively make suburban plays.
Okay. Last question, well, maybe second to last question. As far as rent pricing and underwriting and forecasting, if you look out a year, 2 years, how are you looking at rents, let's say downtown Chicago right now for the foreseeable future?
Well, Chicago, again, being Chicago-centric in our conversation today, Chicago's never been known for price shocks, right? Either high or low. So in terms of a correction, we anticipate there will be some sort of correction. We've been discussing it in our internal meetings for well before the pandemic as to, you know, when will things start to slow? We were deep, deep into the cycle, even, you know, kind of before March. So none of that, I think, really came as a surprise. I think the actual shock to the system with the pandemic is a bit of a surprise. But from a pricing standpoint, a lot has been invested in Chicago. And I think what you will see is a stickiness on pricing on the face rates. It's likely there will be some concessions. I think owners that are seeking good credit tendencies and through you know, what's clearly going to be a recessionary period will get creative with those good credit tenants in terms of, you know, occupancy timing, creative in terms of what the concession package looks like. I do think rents will remain fairly sticky. So I don't anticipate a 20% price drop. You may see some periodic things where people get creative on what the effective deals are, but I don't think that you're going to see a huge shock that you might see in one of the coastal markets. With that said, I think on the growth side, you know, we're probably a good 2 years removed from growth. So you're looking at a period in the next 12 to 24 months where it's a little bit static, and there'll be selective leasing. I think we will see a good deal of short-term renewals as people sort out what they want to do in the near term and have a better handle on what their business is. But again, and clearly the leasing developer in me is biased towards, we will see growth again. It will come back. We're just going to go push through here in the next 12 to 24 months.
Thanks for that. So, yeah, this has been really insightful. And, you know, from your perspective being, you know, this large global real estate investment and development company, to get your perspective. So I really appreciate it. And I hope that we have this conversation a year from now and hopefully things will be in a better place for all of us. So we'll have another podcast a year from now. So put it on your calendar.
I'll put it on my calendar. I look forward to it. We can contemplate if all of our ideas are right. But we're certainly remain optimistic. I think, again, business was born in office space. The first office may have been in someone's garage, but people want to be together. The culture of business is together. And so we're looking forward to being there and hope all of your listeners are too. So thanks for the time this morning, Dougal.
Thanks, Brian. Have a great day.
You too. Talk soon.